He has his own podcast. What is it, y'all? Get my shit together.
Welcome to the Getting My Act Together podcast for Tuesday, January 30, 2024. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope your week is off to a fine start. And let's go. Let's go. LNC, if you're out there, I hope you are well. I hope your journey continues apace. I hope you are finding fulfillment and fulfillment in all that you seek. And I know that the podcast universe here wishes you well. So hope you are doing your thing. And I'm deeply grateful for you supporting me from our very first interaction. And I just want to say that today on this 30th day of January, you know, my wife and I have a pretty good relationship. What am I going to talk about today? I'm going to talk a little bit about my wife's mechanical way of saying good morning to me. It's a touch bureaucrat, a touch nurse ratchet is a little strong, but I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the magosphere apparently losing its marbles. I didn't know. I just learned that the magosphere is deeply anti-Taylor Swift. And I want to talk about that just a little bit. Like, how do you, if you're a Magan, and Magans, please write in and let me know. What do you say to your daughters? Or are you just like, you just keep your mouth shut, I guess is what you do. Your kids are into dumb shit, and then you just let it go. Because if I were to, and my daughter's only five, if I were to speak out against Taylor Swift in my house, I guess because I'm a libtard cuck and all that other thing you think I am. Anyway, I want to talk about that for just a second, in a moment, about people losing their minds about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Is that the name? I had the Chiefs, so I'm happy they won. Do I care a whit about? Anyway, apparently there's lunacy in the magosphere. Can you imagine that? That the NFL is a big conspiracy and Democrat. Are you kidding me? There could not be a more Republican event than the NFL. There are weapons of, there are warplanes flying over at the beginning. There are red, white, and blue flags jammed up your ass. You'll notice the other day that when the 49ers played the team that shat the bed with the coach made terrible decisions. The Lions. Oh, that's the way he does it. That's his way. Well, he fucked up. You have to know sometimes not to be, he made bad decisions, I think. You'll notice all the players that are inflicting brain damage on each other on the field were largely black. Oh, no, dude, the quarterback and McCaffrey, I know, but they're overwhelmingly black. And then afterward, you'll see that handing out of the trophy and all the bullshit on stage. Wow, everyone up there seems white. How did that change? And the first thing, the Chiefs, guys. Pardon me, it was the Chiefs. The Chiefs, you know, talk about generational wealth. The Chiefs guy is being handed a trophy with, like, his dad or grandfather's name on it. Talk about nepotism. Good for him, good for their money. Hunt oil. But that couldn't be. And the first thing he does is, I'd like to thank God, Jesus Christ, the Savior. And all right, dude, that's there could be no more Republican event than the NFL. I'm not mad at them. Remember the Kansas City Chiefs booing unity? It was a terrible podcast I did, but it was called Booing Unity. I think it was the second one I did. I couldn't. And I, you know, have a little more insight into the magosphere. Now I can understand how you boo unity because I know more about you. But that blew my mind. It was the second podcast I did, I think. The first one was called Aisle Seat. The second one was called Booing Unity. And it was terrible. Hopefully now there's a little humor in the rants, if they are rants. And I've figured out a little bit of how to do this entertainment endeavor here. But the first one was just like ranty, nothing funny. Until at the end, I feel like maybe I was onto something where I said, you're fucking Kansas City, man. You're better than this. You're not Philadelphia. And I was like, okay, there. Just tell the truth. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the magosphere. Maybe I just did. So my wife's mechanical way of saying hello in the morning, good morning, the just absolute Taylor Swift, I'm not going to talk. too much about it. But I, all of which will lead to, and there's one thing for my listeners in Atlanta, for my black listeners in Atlanta specifically. And why do I say that? Well, because that's who I'm talking to. White listeners, brown listeners, other listeners, you're welcome to be part of this. I've never missed Atlanta more and feel more dislocated than I do right now, because there is beef happening between Meg Thee Stallion and Nicki Minaj. And I'm not in Atlanta where the beef is not taking place, but I know Atlanta would make sure that I understood it exactly the way it needed to be, and I had all the context. And it apparently it's kicking off between Meg Thee Stallion and Nicki Minaj, and I feel like I'm floating away in space, and my space station, my docking vehicle, is the city of Atlanta. And if I were there, I would be plugged in. I would know exactly what the tea is. I would know exactly what's happening. Alas, I'm in San Diego, which is the opposite of Atlanta, and I don't, you know, I can't look at my phone all day to see what's happening in the beef, but it's really kicked off. Oh, anyway, all of which is, I want to call today's episode, I'm going to give you just a, what do I want to talk about? I want to talk about my wife's mechanical greeting. I want to talk a touch, maybe. Maybe I won't even get into the magosphere. What are you going to say? The NFL is a conspiracy for Democrats? Sure it is. And then where I want to end up is talking about a man who I met the other day who, in the space of, in the spirit of people needing to connect, and I guess this is why people say check on your friends, check on people close to you, a guy I'd never met or met once previously told me in 18 minutes, like, the most intimate, personal, heavy, significant moments of his life. And it was incredible. And I was going to try to recap some of it, not for, you know, humor necessarily, but more around the, God, we do walk around with a lot on our chest. And it made me think, thank goodness I have a podcast and a supportive group of people who listens to it to enable me to get stuff off my chest on days that I'm not doing the morning writing, the morning pages, which I've been doing the last several days. Because my daughter was sick, so she slept in. The Chobani twins slept in. And I was at the kitchen table yesterday from like 6:45 until almost 8 by myself. It was incredible. It was wonderful. My wife and I love each other, and we like each other, and we laugh. We're in, you know, there's an element of stress in our home because we're trying to do right by a five-year-old and be on the same page and schedules and bills and did you pay for ballet and have you gone to the other thing and school's field trip is this and pack the bag. But it's not like it's not a detrimental stress. It's just, it's not zero stress. But I was giving her shit this morning because, you know, we come with the most exciting thing in the morning is seeing our daughter. Right? I mean, sure, we're there. We've been married for how many ever years? I've told you, 21, something like that. We got married on March 2nd, March 3rd of 20, almost 22 years. All right? And we still get a kick out of each other, which is a barometer of if you're, are you still into this? But my wife, let's just ascribe it to this. My wife wakes up more slowly than anyone else, than the other members of the house, or than I do, I should say. So, like, I love when people near me are sleeping because it's them getting what they need and their bodies rebuilding and all that. But I know when my wife takes a nap, that, you know, the wake up is a little slow and grumpy. And so I don't try to force. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Did you get some good sleep? I'm not zany. I'm not that guy. But I give her room and know that, you know, I don't need to be around her waist. She's a little crabby when she wakes up from naps. In the morning, though, we're both excited because here comes that girl bounding in saying, today is a field trip. I can't wait to wear my red shirt. So the teachers know that we're all together in the same group, and I'm going to go on a school bus for the first time. And we're excited to see the girl. So the early moments of the morning, and Mookie, tell me what you think if you're listening, because Mookie picked up on a reel that I put up, doing daily reels, put up a reel a week or two ago, and he remixed it and added his thoughts about his daughter. As soon as you wake up, you go to the kid, or the kid comes to you. So that's where your attention is. And then it's like, oh, hey, we're also my partner, my mate, my wife, my whatever it is, whoever it is. Also, you're part of this. Hello, how are you today? So it's all hands on deck for the kid, which is, I don't know if that's good for the kid or not, but the kid's greeted with just joy and people who love her. And, different generation would say you're spoiling her with your love. Well, fuck. What are you supposed to do to your kids? Just make them all salute the flag, you goddamn sheep. You're the sheep, okay? You're a sheep if you're Aaron Rodgers, okay? So anyway, the first event is, hey girl, how's it going? I know, big day today. And yeah, I'll go get coffee started. And we all kind of find our way down within, 10 minutes of each other. Usually I'm the first one downstairs making coffee for my wife, by the way. Then I'll get myself one. I have to make sure it's ready for her when she comes down. But the way she said good morning to me this morning, I spent the next 40 minutes trying to replicate. Also, she said it second. I said, so we did all the girl, here's Cheerios or yogurt or whatever. And then, coffee for her. And I said, good morning. Here's an inquiry into your well-being. Good morning. But the way she said good morning to me was like, I tried it numerous times. Like, good morning. She said it like that, like, good morning. Good morning. It was like DMV kind of. I told her it sounded like this. Good morning. It sounded like she was going to work and she took a breath when she got out of her car. Or she parked her car in the parking lot and then walked in, saw me and said, good morning. Like this. I told her that's what it sounded like. Aren't I fun to live with? She just said good morning, that's it. But the way she said it, sound caught my ear like, our relationship, and I'm thinking about her and her imaginary coworker, the way it sounded is, we have reached the ceiling of what our relationship, we have reached capacity for what our relationship can be, and let's not pretend it's anything other than it is. It's getting warm in here. It was like, good morning. Like, we have to be next to each other in these cubicles all day. Good morning. And she said, what? I just said good morning. I was like, I know, but you said it like this. He said, good morning. No, it was like, good morning. Like, there are some things that... It was like two words, good morning, with a huge subtext to it. Like, we're not going to talk about any of this. You and I both know where we stand with one another. Good morning. Let's get on with it. And we did. And then I got to tell her about it for the next 40 minutes while she's trying to wake up and get herself ready and then contribute to my daughter getting ready and all of it. So... good morning. That's what I'm going to call this episode. Good morning. But it matters how you say good morning. So back to the... I didn't know that Taylor Swift... I didn't know Magans hated Taylor Swift. Did you? The article I read about this, it said... And I like when they say, how long will this take you? It'll take you 4 minutes. I'm like, I have enough of that. But apparently... the Magosphere, Also, if you're a mag and listening, you put the shit on your hat and on your clothes and everything. So if you hear any pejorative or any dismissiveness in me saying the magosphere or magans, there's none there. I'm just referring to a group of people. I'm not Hillary who's calling you whatever she said, deplorables or whatever. I'm just referring to a collection of people. These are the magans. It's easier than saying, for me, it's easier than saying Trump supporters. Trump supporters. There's your maggins. Your Make America Great, that's your, again, sorry, Make America Great Again. I'm not, you know, fucking maggins. I'm just saying maggins and magosphere. If you, maggin, listening, think that there's more in there, then you need to take a breath, is what you need to do, and say, and ask yourself, all right, I thought there was something in there, but this guy is now telling me, he's just describing a group of people. Can I fucking calm down and get my head around that, or do I need to stay angry and tell him that it's some unconscious weapon of some unknown source in the universe? There is no judgment in me saying Magan or Magosphere. I'm referring to a group of people. If you belong to that group and you are hurt, offended, wounded, feel like this is a name-calling game, you must accept from me right now that it's not. Okay? And the more I say it, the more you can believe me. The article I read said that Maggins got pissed with Taylor Swift. Well, first, or most recently, I guess. Most recently, in the fall, last fall, she urged her 280 million Instagram followers to register to vote. And that drove them crazy because now, Maggins, you know one of the keys to your success is voter suppression. Let's not bullshit each other, okay? That's a big part of it. So I guess that's why. But it's funny, like, she infuriated Maggins when she told her people to vote. Go exercise your democratic right. 280 million followers. You know what was amazing about this, and maybe lost in the weeds, is immediately 35,000 people registered to vote, which is a lot of new votes. But what is inspiring to me about this is she has that many followers and she got that little engagement, relatively speaking. 35, 1, 2, 3, divided by 27, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, buck. I meant to do 280 million. What I'm going to do here, 35, 1, 2, 3, 35,000 divided by 280 million, is that what I said? 280, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is 0.0001 of her Instagram followers. You know what? I have better engagement than Taylor Swift. I don't have quite as many followers, but that's 0%. I can't even say. I don't even know how to express this numerically. It's 12% of a thousandth of a basis point. I don't even know. That's how little movement that post got her. That's wild. Keep your heads up, everyone whose posts don't always have the highest engagement. Taylor Swift got 35,000 people to vote. That's great for her. But she spoke to 280 million of them. That means that 0.0001% of people responded. That means that 280 million, it means minus 35, 1, 2, 3, 279,965,000 of her Instagram followers are like, yeah, fuck this. I'm not going to vote. You know how hard they make it is to vote? Who does? Democrats? No. Magans? You do, right? You don't want people to hand out water. You don't want people to vote early. Anything to impede. And again, it's not a judgment here, fellas. It's just a statement. You don't want people to vote, so understandably, because you realize you're just on the wrong side. You're trying to hold water in your hands. I don't mean wrong side biblically, friends. I mean, you're out of step with what most people feel. And that is, you know, there should be like a livable wage. And people should be able to free to have abortions. And, you know, all that stuff, right? You're just out of step with what most people think. I wasn't saying on the right side, wrong side. In any case, that's terrible engagement. So apparently, that was a big objectionable action that Taylor Swift asked or told her fans, hey, you can vote. You can register to vote. And a staggering amount of them didn't. Okay? So you should be happy, Maggins. But apparently, this goes back even further because in 2018, after years and years of not expressing her political perspective, she decided to, which must have been, and I know that there's a documentary about it that will be highly PR driven, and I'm not going to watch it, but it required some, you know, some courage to do. And she came out and said, I like gay people, and I'm endorsing these two people in Tennessee. And it even got Trump's attention, and he said he liked Taylor Swift's music less, and she doesn't know anything, and the usual. I had no idea. And then, of course, now her boyfriend is, I guess, a Bud Light spokesperson. That's a big no-no. But even worse, apparently he's a vaxxer. Can you believe that? He got a vaccine. I had no idea. But what do you do, MAGA dad? And I'm serious. What do you do? I'm not talking shit. Like, you have a 14-year-old girl who, you can see in her eyes, is like, wants you to do anything possible to, I guess I'm asking as a dad, hey, you know what I'm asking, Magan, dad? I'm asking as a dad, what do you do? Do you do what is best for your daughter? And, you know, take out a second mortgage to get Taylor Swift tickets? When your daughter comes, you're like, dad, please, it'll mean more than all the girls in school, all the white girls in school are going. And you're like, I make $42,000 a year. How am I going to get Taylor Swift tickets? But look at my baby girl. She's the light of my life. I love her more than anything else. This is MAGA dad talking to his 14-year-old daughter, looking at his 14-year-old daughter. She wants these Taylor Swift tickets. But Taylor Swift is a plant by the Defense Department to get people to vote for Joe Biden. What do you do? I hope, Dad, that you do not fall into the trap of trying to litigate against your 14-year-old girl and the Swifties. That would just be, I would think that's just going to be a death blow, right? I mean, you can't win. You can't win. Taylor Swift has just got numbers. And your daughter is part of something bigger than all of us. How do you handle it? You just worked, I don't know what the number is. Let's say your last 4.5-5 weeks of wages are going to go directly to Taylor Swift, who thinks about social issues. A billionaire, Taylor Swift. You're giving her your five. Man, I'm telling you, it's got to be tough. But there's your 14-year-old girl. I think you just take the L, right, and just buy the tickets for her. What's going to be more important in 30 years? What's going to be more important when hopefully I make it to my daughter's 30th birthday? I really took a stand on Taylor Swift, or I was the dad who came through for his kid and got tickets. I empathize with you, MAGA dad. I really do. You know why? Because I bought my daughter tickets to Disney on Ice. I don't like Disney. I mean, I do. I've long loathed Disney and its sanitized version of everything. And it's once deplorable record when it comes to individual rights. That has changed. And now has become, especially when you compare it to DeSantis, relatively progressive. But I never liked Disney. And actually, before I was a parent, I was like, fuck, now I got to go to Disney World and all this shit. So I had a moment where my wife's like, hey, we should take her to Disney on Ice. And I was like, let's do something that I heard Mike Myers say that they did in his family. It was called no money fun. Doesn't mean like let's be tight-fisted. It means like let's just not throw money at entertaining ourselves. But my wife had a good point. She fucking loves this stuff. It's Frozen. It's Encanto. Encanto. I was like, yeah, okay, let's go. How much are they? $85? Are you kidding me? But Magadad, you probably did the same thing. You immediately headed it off. And once you decide, like, this is what's best for the girl, you spend the money and it's gone and you're at peace. You're at equilibrium. It is either a reflection of how much my daughter means to me or how impoverished my life is for emotional stimulation in San Diego, because comedy for me here sucks and it's depressing me, honestly, and it's really frustrating me. I'm still optimistic. I'm still going to keep banging away, but not having the stand-up life that I did in Atlanta I'm not adjusted to it and I'm not happy about it. I'm still optimistic and I'm still fighting. I'm just, it's a fucking drag. I'm not gonna whine and like, fuck, I'm give up, that sort of thing. But what I'm talking to you is real. Like, there is a gap in my life that I'm going to try to address tonight by calling the Comedy Store, trying to get on fucking open mic, and, you know, whatever. It's either. How much, so the point is, that's an honest moment. There's a gap in my life, and I'm not fulfilled by it. And I'm trying to fill it with cheap booze and cheap women. So it's either my deep emotional attachment to my daughter and how much I care for her, or the impoverished social emotional life that I have here in San Diego, or some combination, a hybrid in between there, that when I went to Disney on Ice and Elsa came skating out, or actually it was Anna that came skating out first, I believe Anna came out, I was emotional because that character is so significant in my daughter's 5-year-old life, or historically has been. Now she's moved on to other stuff. But I felt a rush, like I almost teared up when Anna skated onto the ice. Because I knew, like, oh my God, this is your shit. And I just see her eyes just like laser focused on what's happening down there. And then like her face just like is like smiling, like Lemmy would have said, a rictus grin, just beaming. And it was like so incredible. I was like, I told my wife, I'm getting emotional here. This is really incredible to see. So I empathize with you, MAGA man. I get it, because that's what you want, right? But if I saw, you know, when Anna comes skating out, if I saw her as the opposite of everything I believed in, and I'm sitting here like, yeah, let's go get a doll that looks like her and spend more money, I would frustrate me too. I think you just, as soon as you decide, all right, I want my daughter to... I'm asking you as much as I'm saying what my thought process would be. I'm mag-explaining. I think you'd just say, this is what she wants. Fuck it all. Everything else I'll square away and do it immediately. Do it immediately at the... I think there's something powerful in that. I'm going to get to this guy, and I realize that I'm running out of time because of my own challenges. The way, if you're going to do something you don't really want to do, that your heart's not in, but you know that it's the right thing and you should do it, kind of like taking my daughter to Disney on Ice. Anybody who struggles with this being at the precipice of, fuck, I don't want to do it, but I should do it, I'm going to go do it. Right at the beginning of making that decision, just tell yourself, or this is what I tell myself, if I make the decision, that's that. I can't Monday morning quarterback it, because then I'm going to be a miserable asshole along the way and then ruin it for my wife, ruin it for my daughter. I'm just going to decide I'm going to do this thing. And not that, you know, Disney on Ice is a horrific thing, but just some event like that where you're like, I don't want to do it because this and that, like, but I should. Just do it and charge it to the game. That's my advice. Just as soon as you make the decision, say, now I've made the decision, I can't go back and make myself and everybody else miserable. So I realize I'm running out of time, and I it comes down to my scheduling is really what it comes down to. And the podcast is going to be a few minutes late today. What I need to do is make sure on Monday night that I record 10 or 15 minutes, and that way I can do 30 or so minutes on Tuesday morning and still have the podcast. After everyone's left the house, the podcast gets up at the scheduled time, 12 o'clock Eastern, so. Because I know people out there, like former Central Jersey prosecutor, are, you know, like, dude, put the podcast up. I will, and thank you for writing in, sir. The need to connect, the need to be heard, and why people say, oh, you should check on your friends, you should check on, which is like, it's good abstract suggestion, you know, go check on that person. You should check on them. How are you doing? Everything okay? You good? It's important to do. I just wanted to pass on this guy who I met. I told you I go to a gym. I said in the loosest terms, I started like in December just to get a little strength training to enhance my running. Paul Hooper, the, I think Charlotte, New York now, New York based comic, Paul Hooper, he's been posting on his Instagram stories about his runs, and he's running like 7 minute miles. My goodness. Anyway, I go to what could loosely be described as a gym. It's really like, seems like 500 or 700 square feet of space on the busy road near where I live. And there are a couple treadmills and a bunch of light strength training stuff. So light weights, lots of bands. It's also very low tech. So the machine where you do like lat pull downs and, you know, that sort of thing looks like the same one that, you know, I first saw in my middle school or gym or whatever. So it's pretty raggedy. And the people who go there are not, they're there just to tone. And you know what? They're older. Everyone there is older than me, which is great. But it's very lo-fi. And it's so lo-fi that the owner of the gym just gives you a code to the door. It's on a really busy street. So, which gives you the pleasure of walking through like three guys smoking cigarettes as you're going into the place to work out. It's a city gym. But we get a code, and you can go work out anytime. You could go work out at midnight. Nobody's there. You could go in the middle of the day. If the owner of the gym is training someone, you have to be in the other side. You have to be on the other side of the gym. So, fingers crossed, the other side has the shit you need to work out. I have met two people there. Three people. Three non-owners of the gym I have met there. And one was a guy, so you have a code. I just type it in on the keypad, door opens, I go in and work out. Like I said, I'm not trying to be Hercules. I'm not trying to be that swoles guy you see. Like men over 40, 50, 60, 70, and the guy's like yoked coming out of the ocean. Not with a white beard that's just nice and his flat top and just arms. I'm not trying to be that guy. I'm generally strengthening my core and my legs to run without injury. That's my primary goal there, and to do some light toning of my upper body. I've told you to envision me shirtless, wet, coming out of the shower. Small gym, I've met three people. One time I was there and a guy popped in. He said, oh, isn't this the greatest gym? You can just use it anytime you want. No one's here. No one talks to you. I said, except now, because you're talking to me. But yeah, generally speaking, he goes, I'm not even working out. I'm just here to use the bathroom. I'm like, well, fucking lucky me, dude. This place is not enormous. It's not Planet Fitness. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, and I looked at him. He's like, oh, yeah, I live right across the street and there's a plumbing issue. All right, maybe it's just a correlation that you're involved. In any case, I met him, and I couldn't tell what he did when he went in the bathroom. I couldn't tell which number. But he did close, when he came out of there, he closed the bathroom door. Did that tell you anything? What does that tell you? I don't know how you play it where you are, but I like to leave the door open and have the... not socialize the odor, but I think the odor probably breaks down if the door is open as opposed to like hotboxing it. Some people, I think, when they're finished working in there, they close the door. I don't think that's the play. Also, just light a match if there is one. But I think the move is to leave the door open and let the odor, you know, collide with better air as opposed to just tightening like a vice, this chamber of stench. Anyway, I don't know what he did, but he closed the door. So I met that guy. I met another woman who's probably 60, whose name's Evelyn. And then I met another guy named Larry, who could be 73 years old for all I know. And the other day, it was Saturday. It was Saturday. Today is Monday. Today is Tuesday morning. It was Saturday that I went in there. Larry was there, and since I know his name and I know Evelyn's name, when I see them, I say, hey, Larry, how are you? And he said, hey, good to see you. And then we were off to the races. I jumped in and was doing my lat pull downs, the things that I'm doing to strengthen my back and core, which you also need if you have a growing child that you're picking up every day. You need to bend your legs. You need to scoop in. I pick up a 40-pound brick every day, a lot. Larry, I don't know where it started. Maybe innocently, like, I like the gym, or this is pretty convenient. Yeah, oh, you live in the neighborhood. Somehow, maybe I started it. Maybe I laid the breadcrumbs and said, oh, yeah, we just moved back here after 18 years. And then he starts telling me about how he moved here, and he lives, you know, within half a mile from where I live, I suppose. But we were talking about the neighborhood, what it used to be like, and then it came that he'd only been there for 4 years. I was like, oh, so you didn't know it when I knew it way back. 4 years, and then he said, yeah, I moved here from... somewhere nice, Marina Del Rey or some ridiculous place like that. And Laguna, some crazy moneyed place. But I'm looking at this guy and he's not crazy money guy. He looks kind of like life's kicked him around a little bit. And then he proceeds to tell me his life story. Yeah, I moved from Marina Del Rey. I was doing real estate there with a guy. And I'm looking at him like, this guy is going to tell me a story about how he lost a bunch of fucking money. Because he just had that destroyed, he looked kind of destroyed. Like life really, you know, and it's I think you're a monster if you don't feel it in your gut. And maybe this is my, I don't work at Goldman Sachs mentality. But when someone's been taken advantage of, I felt bad. And I knew it had happened before he told me. But that's pretty, I'm not talking about anybody else's reaction but mine. I feel bad when someone tells you that they were taken advantage of. In that moment, when they're telling you, on stage, you laugh at it, I guess. So he's telling me that there was a real estate deal, and it's a guy he met, and I'm just, because I don't do deals with guys I met. I'm not that kind of guy. I'm like, where'd you meet him? He's like, I met him online. I'm like, fuck, this is not going to a good place. Turns out, Larry and the guy tried to do a deal or something, and it didn't work, but Larry got out of there with his money intact. So he didn't lose money until the next goddamn story he tells me, where the guy took six figures from him and disappeared. I'm like, I'm not victim blaming. Like, oh, how did that relationship come about? He's like, yeah, I met him on it. There's a real estate forum. And I just imagine some guy who's slick, like, hey, these are all the deals I've done. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Anybody else want to get involved with me? And it's like, yeah, sure. And he took Larry for six figures, Larry said. And I was like, oh man, I'm sorry. That's just awful. That sucks. Happens all the time. I mean, it's happening as we speak right now. People are fucking each other out of money. It's the human endeavor. But on a quiet Saturday afternoon in a miserable, in a still little gym spot on a busy road, it was sad, And I was mindful of just being authentic, I suppose, in the moment, listening to him. Not listening to solve. Like, did you talk to an attorney? None of that. Just, oh man, that sucks. Fuck, I'm sorry. I can only imagine. While also kind of trying to keep it moving. Like, I don't want to have this drag down my, my whole day. Right? I'm here for you, Larry, but this is all the second time I've met you. And then he's like, yeah, it was, I didn't get the sense that it broke him financially. But again, he looked broken, this man. Well, guess what? He continues to tell me about why he moved to San Diego, because one of his daughters lives here, and the other one is somewhere else in another state, and I think in their 40s, something like that, and got divorced. He told me he got divorced, and I said, how old were your kids? And it took him a while to figure that out. I think he said 13 and 15, and I said, oh yeah, I did mention my wife. I said, oh, my folks split up when I was 8, and it was hard on me, because he said that one of the kids took it fine, and the other kid it was really hard on. And I said that, yeah, I was 8, and it was really rough on me, and I didn't adapt to it well. But my wife's parents also got divorced when she was really young. I think she was like 2 or something. So she was fine, and she's a tougher person than I am. But I said, my wife and I have been married for 22 years. Come on. And I didn't tell him about how she says good morning to me. Good morning. Good morning. But I said, maybe your wife's, if there's any silver lining, I guess. I wasn't, again, trying to solve. I said, but my wife and I, we both come from divorced families and have been married for a long time, 22 years or whatever it is. I think in part because we learn from our parents' divorces. Like, this is what to do, what not to do. And also probably each of us had a reasonably significant relationship before we got together. So I was trying to, I was not telling him. I was trying to show him that, our parents' divorce actually probably enabled us to have a good marriage. And maybe that's somehow happening for your one daughter. And he was like, yeah, I... He He didn't say, wow, I never thought of that before. He's like, yeah, you know, life's complicated. And anyway, I don't know this man, but we're in this level of conversation. And he said, yeah, the divorce really, and he jumps right back to the divorce. He goes, it really threw me because it just didn't make any sense. And I was like, fuck, this guy's going to get kicked. This is just somebody who, I wasn't like on the gridiron of the NFL, like dog eat dog, but I was like, I'm not going to be hanging out with Larry a lot because, you know, Larry loses. And I didn't say I only hang out with winners, but it's just not good for my juju. You know, I have enough people in my life that I don't talk to, that I should spend more time with, that I'm not taking on Larry. If this was someone different, like that had a lot of energy and some wins and we're getting stuff done, like, yeah, maybe, dude, let's fucking go get coffee or beer and talk about comedy and, you know, see what we can do. But I just, I'm not going to be socializing with Larry, but I'm fond of him. I'm invested a little bit. He said the divorce he didn't see coming. And, or it didn't make any sense. And I said, oh, you know, and I thought about saying, like, before that, like, because you're gay. Because he had a something, I didn't think it was impossible that he was gay. But he said, no, his wife just, like, wouldn't go to counseling and just hit him up with papers and said, we're getting divorced. Wouldn't talk about it, which is obviously there are few things more damaging to a person, more emotionally hurtful than to just shut down and not give them any insight. In many ways, it's like the only power you have left at sometimes when you're so destroyed. I remember feeling like that as a teenager. Like, I felt so alienated from the world that when, like, people would ask me what was wrong, like, if I was beefing with my parents, my juggling instructor, or asshole administrators at school, the last thing I would do would be to tell them what was wrong with me. You know, I don't feel like people accept me, or I don't know, whatever it was. I knew the only thing that I could lever agency I had in the situation was to not tell them anything, which is so fucked. In any case, Larry's wife would not tell him what the deal was. But it turned out, it sounds like, that she was bipolar. That's what he said. And then he just offered up, and she committed suicide. She killed herself. And I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. I'm really sorry. To hear, you know, I don't even really remember what I said. I might be just inventing my response, but it was something like this, like, oh God, man, you know. And then I'm like, can I get those tens so I can do water pitchers? Trying to lean over, Larry, get yourself together here. She did it a long time ago. Anyway, he told me that, he's like, yeah, it was rough. And he started breaking down. He had to call his daughter, who was in New York at the time, and tell her. And she was at work, like at a client, making a presentation. Maybe she was in New York for work, but it was a road game for her. So, according to Larry's telling, he had to call an office where his daughter didn't work, say, my daughter is there at the, you know, Sheraton or the Ramada or whatever, making a presentation. I need to talk to her. And then he said, I actually asked someone from, so it's like a hotel, I guess, where she's making this presentation. I actually asked someone at the hotel if they would be with her. I can only imagine, as a father, this fucking horror. He had to call his daughter in New York while she was working and tell that daughter that her mom, her Baba, had killed herself. Baba is what my daughter calls my wife, her mom. And all the miles away, Larry is asking someone at the hotel, will you please be with my daughter when I give her the worst news she could possibly hear? I feel like I'm pretty easy to talk to, like a decent listener, because I think about it. I try to be a decent listener. At least I'm self-aware of it. I don't know if I am, but people talk to me. People just will talk to me. And so I played some role in Larry opening up and feeling comfortable enough to tell me all this stuff. But that exchange from when I walked into the gym and he said he was almost about to leave. I didn't even tell you about that. I'm like, oh, hey, good to see you. Are you using this? And he's like, no, I'm about to leave. Like, you know, initial gym chat. But from the time that happened till the time he's telling me about calling his daughter in New York to tell her what has happened to her mom was not more than 20 minutes. And I know, because I still had more of my workout to do after. So whatever role I played, some. But it really is, maybe the learning is, if you have shit on your chest, just tell somebody. I hope that Larry had a better day and it brightened up. He said he was going to play pickleball. I said, God, Larry, please be careful with those ACLs. You look like you're walking around on matchsticks as it is. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's tough to go check in on people, I suppose. Like, I don't know what that means. Like I said, it's kind of abstract counsel. But maybe just tell people. Larry did it in a way in that nobody would think, oh, fuck, stop dumping or stop talking about yourself. It tapped into something where I was like, all right, I'm human to human here. Let me ride with you on this one, Larry. Yeah, just tell people, I suppose. Or right into the podcast. Anyway, it was just interesting. You know, it's life with a capital L. Sorry the podcast is a little late, but look at that, 53 minutes. How about that? Top quality entertainment. Have a great week. I will talk to you on Friday. And yeah, just tell people. Okay, bye.